kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Another laid-back review-style episode going on, and we're kicking things off with Chris Taylor. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm super laid-back. How are you doing? Would you say medium laid-back?
No, I was always large, so Chris would have been medium.
Yeah.
So how's it going? How's things going for you?
Oh, man, hectic. I'm about to move. I mean, same town, just different location, moving into a house that is, it's a house that I think is a testament to man's hubris, because it was built on the side of a hill, and maybe only 3 feet of the actual house sits on ground.
Interesting.
The rest of it's on stilts. So that's going to be interesting.
Very interesting indeed.
Yeah, so, but I've already... We've already seen deer in the driveway in front of the garage. So
nice dinner.
Yeah, exactly. My bow and arrow out and go Skyrim style on it.
There you go, man.
I like that killing deer with a bow and arrow is perfectly a real world thing, but I only relate to it through Skyrim. It just now occurred to me while I was saying it.
Hey, whatever works, right?
Exactly. Yes, adorable dinner. I'm looking forward to it.
Good stuff. So, you ready to talk about some games?
Yeah, I got a few of them this week.
You excited for this?
Of course.
Vidya games?
Of course, I'm always excited.
All that good stuff?
Always excited to be playing the Vidya games.
Cool. Well, let us kick off with the game One More Dungeon, developed by Stately Snail. What a name. Published by Rattalaika Games. It released December 14th on the Switch for $7.99. It will be out... I don't know what day it is. It's the 17th. Oh, my God. It's already.
It's the 17th. Actually, it's past Christmas. We already missed it.
Fuck. It has been a long week. It released December 12th on the PS4 and Vita. Oh, my God. It's a week after that, and I don't know what fucking day it is. Holy shit. What is wrong with me? Being a nameless adventure seeker, your job is to reach the final level deep within the dungeon and destroy the obelisks that are used by the forces of evil to invade the world. Use a melee weapon, magic staffs, and antique artifacts to burst way through the hordes of enemies inhabiting a few game areas.
I love it. It's just like Yodanji, which is the other Rattalaika, whatever. I don't know how to pronounce the company.
I just go with Rattalaika. I'm probably Rattalaika. Wrong, though.
That's fine. Rattalaika.
So tell me,
we have this long history of mispronouncing things.
We do. That is my show.
Pretty much.
I don't know names, so I just guess, and I'm always wrong.
Yeah. Always wrong. Anyway, what was your question?
What is One More Dungeon?
One More Dungeon. One More Dungeon is the game that I never thought I absolutely needed and had been waiting for my whole life. Because nice. It kind of combines everything I like in video games. Like, things that I always believed were specific to me. So... needless to say, I'm a fan. But, okay, so One More Dungeon is a first-person roguelike with 8-bit style graphics, but is fully 3D and 60 frames per second. That is to say, it was weird to start this game and see just how damn smooth it runs with pixel graphics, like, basically kind of, you know, I don't know what you would call it. It's like sprite-based 3D. So think like Ultima Underworld or Daggerfall, like the early Elder Scrolls game.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like that, only, you know, done in the blocky style. And it doesn't run really slow like those games did. It runs incredibly smooth like a modern game. And so, yeah, I guess you could say that upon first glance, it looks a little bit like Minecraft because, you know, your guy's got these two weapons. They're clearly just like 2D sticks, basically. And in this game, you're in your right hand is always a melee weapon, and there's a few different types. And in your left hand, there's a usually a magic wand. I haven't seen any other kind of projectile weapons, and there's a several different types there. Basically, you start the game. You set your, what do they call them, mutators? Something like that. Basically,
mutators.
I think it is. Let me look. I'll start a game. I can't remember specific I can't remember proper nouns ever. I used to think it was names, but it turns out it's everything. But they're basically in-game modifiers. So you can start off with, let's say double your pool of magic, which is what your melee weapon uses for ammunition.
Mm-hmm.
They are called mutators. And that's actually a cool aspect of the game that I'd like to touch on right quick, is that the mutators, the first several, make the game much easier, dare I say bearable, because if you go in just, which you'll have to initially, if you go in without anything, then it's a very difficult game, much like Yodanji, because, like I said, same people. But the first two that you unlock, and it's for a very small amount of points, like basically all the points that you get in the game for killing enemies, breaking things, collecting items, and especially advancing through the dungeon. All those points, even though the game starts completely over every time you die, you retain those points and you're able to purchase mutators to modify your next game. So within the first couple of games of just complete bitter defeat, I was able to purchase double my starting pool of life, which is really nice, and also having the cutting the enemy's life in half, so it takes much less to kill them. Mm-hmm. And that was extremely useful. And like I said, you can have, those are both, I would dare say, the best modifiers in the game, and they're the first ones you get. As you get up into the several thousands, it's all stuff to make the game more challenging, because obviously you would have played the game a lot by then, and you're looking for more of a challenge. And it's crazy stuff, too. And just to mention, like, the last one, which I think is 15,000 in-game points, some incredible thing like that. It makes you lose a point of damage for every 30 seconds you're playing, just permanently.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And since you can only choose two mutators to go into any game with, so if you use the curse, like, your other mutator would either have to be the doubling your pool of life thing, or you're just going to have 4 minutes to find something to heal yourself with.
Oh, God.
Because you start the game with, like, 8 points. Needless to say, this game is a little challenging. They give you a real, like I said, with the easier, the mutator called It Was Easy is the one that halves the enemy's lives. You can make a fair bit of progress. I got down to level 3 consistently, and which is kind of nice because that's where the scenery and the music changes. So it looks like this game, like, has constant scenery changes, and the music is, becomes different. And I actually also noticed that there's, depending on, because obviously the game is randomly / procedurally generated, occasionally you'll find a bonus stage where you go into this nightmare hell, and if you can get through a certain, like, kind of, sort of like a fast action puzzle, like just dodging projectiles and things like that, then you can end up, like, with a nice, sort of sequence-breaking item, like something way more powerful than what you normally have.
Hmm.
And like I said, so your melee weapon is something for one, it's infinite use, so it's going to be kind of your primary weapon, because this is sort of a survival-style game because of the roguelike aspect of it. And it starts off with, like, a little knife, which you just kind of tap at the enemy, and it does one damage, and, you know, for the first level or so, that's all right until you get to the boss. And then you can upgrade it to a spear, which is really slow, but gives you a really good amount of distance, or a sword, which is my favorite, which is just a balance between the two. And occasionally you'll find a magic augmented weapon, which does more damage but drains your pool of magic, which your magic is divided into green, blue, red, and blue, fire, ice, and acid, for whatever reason.
Interesting.
All the great all the great elements of the earth. And yeah, your magic staff is going to correspond to any one of those three. So if you have a fire staff, it uses two fire points every time it shoots. And then, you know, you just pick up more red stuff along the way. There's also a handy thing that converts your useless items. Like if you wind up with two fire staffs, which you obviously can't equip both, you can throw the one fire staff into this pit that basically turns it into red points. So that's really cool. It's cool that the game considered that. But, and then you can like occasionally upgrade to things like a double fire staff, which shoots two fireballs. Like a acid shock staff, which actually just throws out this stream of acid bubbles, like just constantly, but in a short range, and all kinds of fun items to be picked up in this game. But yeah, like the main thing going for it, besides, you know, because it basically does play like a roguelike, this game is meant to be started over constantly. But what I do like about it is that you really do get the hang of it, and you get the sense of sort of making more progress every time, and you know, eventually you'll become the kind of badass that can make it to the, you know, final level and destroy the obelisks and whatever.
So cool. So I know you played it on PS4 and on the Switch. How do the two versions stack up?
Well, basically I would say that the Switch version and the PS4 version on a television are exactly identical. If anything, I would say the Switch version, it seemed like the colors were a little better, like more saturated, perhaps. But that could have just been a trick of the brain. It's also got an in-game brightness setting, and that might have been set different
maybe
between the two by default. But in portable mode, so obviously the Switch, if you take it out of the dock, it becomes a portable game, and I feel like it really shines there because it's a nice-looking game. It looks great on the screen, and again, it moves like really silky smooth for a first-person game like this. And on the PS4, though, you do get a PS Vita download as well, so you can play it on that. But I don't have a Vita myself, so it's not linked up to my Sony store. So I don't know how it looks on the Vita, but I mean, everything looks great on the Switch when it's portable because it's got a giant screen and everything. So
yeah,
I would say the Switch version narrowly edges out. But then again, if you have a Switch and you don't have like a mega memory card in it, then, you know, the game's a little over a gig, I think. And if you want to conserve room, then I guess get it on the PS4. I don't know.
Overall, for $8, what's your thoughts?
$8. This game is too good for $8. This is easily a $15 game. So go ahead and pick it up if you're a fan of first-person games that kind of move like Skyrim. Actually, it more moves like Doom because you can't look up or down. You only can look, you know, side to side kind of thing, which is actually, I think, better because there's no reason it's a dungeon to like have to look up or down. And but yeah, if you like that style of like first person dungeon crawling, but without the pesky story and exploration aspects, then this is definitely the game for you. Fans of roguelikes, I think, will find it a really nice, challenging game, and also a refreshing perspective because it's not the top-down type of thing. And basically, it's for everybody but filthy casuals because it is a little tough for those who just want to go in and have a good time, like, I don't know, farting around. You will get killed by a bat.
Nice.
Like, just a single bat.
Nice. All right, next game to talk about is called Yooka-Laylee, developed by Playtonic Games, published by Team 17. It released December 14th on the Switch for $39.99. Explore huge, beautiful worlds, meet and beat an unforgettable cast of characters, and hoard a vault load of shiny collectibles as Yooka and Laylee embark on an epic adventure to thwart corporate creep Capital B and his devious scheme to absorb all the world's books and convert them into pure profit. Chris, tell me about Yooka-Laylee.
Yooka-Laylee. Well, without going into the long ass history of like this game's like Kickstarter-ness and personnel changes and all this other stuff, it's basically a 3D platformer developed by former Rare people who made Banjo-Kazooie, for which this is a spiritual successor, though it has nothing to do with those games. And thank goodness, because I've never played them. So I get to review this completely based on the game that I installed and turned on. So nice. Just letting anybody who listens to this know, I haven't really kept up with what other people say about this game. Having said, I think that it's really good. So Ukulele is the easiest thing to compare it to, really, is a like Nintendo 64 era, like 3D platformer a la, you know, Super Mario 64 or Donkey Kong 64 or that other one with the bear and the bird. But this one stars a, this one stars a lizard and a bat. Everybody speaks in tongues, essentially. And there's a snake salesman who wears pants in one of those ways where it's like, if a snake could wear pants, would it wear them like this or like this? You know, so, basically these two characters, they're kind of like, the game opens up with their book getting stolen, sucked into a giant vacuum on the top of a corporation owned by a guy who apparently has eyeballs attached to his eyebrows. I don't know. But he's a mad businessman, and he has a duck who lives in a glass like container. I don't know. Dr. Quack, I guess is his name.
Nice.
And, from the get-go, you can see that this game is trying its very best to be, like, over the top and quirky and things like that. And the humor in it actually is really, really well done. I think it does little references to, like, different 90s sort of gaming tropes, including, like, a direct reference to Nintendo 64, which is great. I think one of the inventions is called, like, something that starts with an N and then 64, different things like that. So I was quite pleased with it. As far as like the actual gameplay goes, a lot of it is basically running and, you know, just running around, using your melee attack, collecting feathers, which allow you to purchase special moves from the traveling snake pants wearing salesman. And, then once you get like past the sort of tutorial dungeon, which they're very obvious about how it's a tutorial dungeon, which is always fun to me in these video games. Now they're like, we're doing a thing that all video games do, but we're making fun of ourselves for it at the same time. But you still have to play it. And, you rescue a page out of a magical book called a pagey. I guess the book is called a bookie. I don't know. And with that pagey, you transport to a magical world in a book that is held in that corporate sort of, I don't know what it was. It's like a business center, I guess. I don't know. Seemed like it was a factory of some kind. But anyway, once you transport to this world, then your job is to collect as many pagies as possible so that you can get to the next world and et cetera, et cetera. Think of Super Mario 64 and stars.
Yeah.
It's kind of what you're looking for. One thing that I noticed about the game, like kind of a pros and cons thing, the pros, for sure, this game does every single little thing it can to like add more and more to the mix. Like in the first stage, you're like everybody that you talk to has a different little mini game that you can play. I got into a foot race with a cloud for whatever reason. And I lost handily, so apparently there's some special move I need to be saving up for to beat that nimble nimbus. But, and like, whereas the rest of the game is basically, like I said, just running around and looking for those feathers and looking for those pages and things like that, it really seems that the real meat of the game is getting into these little, side missions and boss fights and, just weird, awkward little thing, not awkward, I guess, but like kind of, what am I thinking of? Eccentric? Yeah, eccentric little things that I think it just, you know, it makes you sit back and smile and then you're looking for the next thing to happen. Actually kind of reminds me of like how Super Mario Odyssey is going. It's like, you know, Odyssey is nice and big open world and everything, but obviously they've planted in like so many little other things that you can do. On the con side, I would say that it's a very slippery feeling game. Like, I don't know what it is about it. I guess what I ultimately decided is that when you play like a really, really good 3D platformer, like, let's say Super Mario 64, like it actually, physically it feels like Mario has weight.
Yeah.
Like you're able to, like the physics of it feel really good like that. This game felt a little lighter, like the characters were top heavy almost. So it's like nine times out of like 10 on the first area, I was trying to run across bridges and I would just walk right off the sides. I was like, I couldn't orient myself and I couldn't tell if it was like the way I was moving the stick or if it was like the way the camera was or if it was something else. I didn't really play around with the camera options. Apparently there are some, but even that. Okay. So one of the other things in the game is that you unlock, and actually there are a lot available at the first of the game, like at the very beginning, but you can unlock arcade style mini games that you can also play sort of outside the regular game, but I believe that they can lead to in-game rewards. And one of the games, like the description is, collect feathers in this, just like in the regular game, but with a better camera. Because the camera is static and just moving behind you in an auto scroll. I know. So I'm like, I guess the thing about Yooka-Laylee is it's a very good game, and where it kind of falters, it apparently is super aware of where it falters, which is kind of an odd philosophy for game design, I think. But ultimately, I was quite pleased with playing this, and I'm going to be playing it a lot more. So
nice. I'm guessing everything holds up and plays well on the Switch.
Yes. The only thing I can say about it is, again, I'm finding myself in the market for one of those giant memory cards, because apparently once they hit the market, the Switch is going to be able to utilize micro SD cards up to 2 gigabytes in size. Terabyte.
Yeah.
Terabytes.
I was going to say 2 gig is not a lot.
No. And I was going to say, with the system's onboard 32 gigs of memory, this game takes up 5.4 gigs.
Oh, wow.
So if you're downloading this one, make sure that you have the space for it, because I ultimately had to push back the last couple of months of games I reviewed, had to push them off to the side in order to fit this one on there.
Oh, man.
It's one of the chunkier Wii titles, and I don't think it has a physical release yet, right, on the Switch?
I think it's supposed to be next year, some early next year sometime, I think.
Okay. So that's the thing to keep in mind, is that it is a full game that you're downloading. It's not like the 1 or 2 gigs that maximum that the other games are. So
yeah.
But apart from that, no, it looks gorgeous. Like the graphics in this game, they definitely play around with a childish aesthetic, but when you kind of like really notice like the textures and like the enemy designs and things like that, it's really well done. This is a very nice game to look at.
Nice.
And the music is excellent too, and it's by one of the classic guys. They've got Grant Kirkhope and David Wise on this one. I don't know about Steve Burke. I don't know him that well, but Grant Kirkhope and David Wise are two rare composers that were like amazingly good.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, it looks like this other guy did mostly games that I never played.
Nice. So overall, $40. What is your verdict on this one?
$40. Just make sure that you know what you're getting into. Look at gameplay vids and things like that. If you have kids, this is an excellent game for kids. Because it's just on the you know, I would say Mario side of difficult. Like it's not a super difficult game. Neither is it too handholdy, you know? Like, they do tell you what to do across all the tutorial dungeon and stuff, but once you get to exploring, you really get to exploring. But there's so much content in this game that I think younger players are definitely going to find a lot to have fun with here. And for the older set, it harkens back to, like, Nintendo 64-style platforming, so, you know, what more can you like? Or what more can you ask for?
Very true.
Yeah. I would say $39. Try it, but if you appreciate classic rare games and, you know, you have a nice big memory card, then go ahead and buy it.
Sounds good. I know a lot of people, when the game first launched, they had a lot of gripes that the game pretty much just plays like a N64 3D platformer, when the entire point of the game from Kickstarter to release was that it was going to play exactly like an N64 platformer.
Oh, I see. So it's one of those issues of the game is exactly what it's supposed to be, and people are mad.
So people bitched about the game being exactly what they promised it would be.
Yeah, this is a this is an issue I've noticed a lot in, or this is a thing that I noticed a lot in being a gamer who really hasn't been that current on video games in 20 years, but then suddenly finds himself having to review new games. It's that I'm having a ball with all of these games, and it's like,
and
I don't
understand.
What
games should be, enjoying everything instead of being jaded and bitchy about everything.
Yeah, gamers are weird.
No.
Something has happened. Something happened in the past 20 years where everyone suddenly has all these bad opinions.
The internet happened.
Yeah. Well, this game is definitely what it says it is, so there you go.
Nice. Next game to talk about is called Bleed, developed by Boot Disc Revolution, published by Digirati Distribution. This one also released December 14th on the Switch for $14.99. Rin is a girl with a big arsenal and big dreams. She wants to be the ultimate video game hero. Help her take down the greatest heroes of all time in an action-packed bid to claim the title for herself and show the world what a true hero looks like. Chris, what did you think of Bleed?
I was so expecting No More Heroes, like, out of the synopsis of the plot, because it's, you know, your badass hero goes after all these other people in order to win the glory or whatever, but actually this game is way better.
I mean, you shit-talking No More Heroes?
A little. I mean, I like it okay, bitch. But... okay, so, Bleed is... Ah, man, I was not prepared for how cool this game is, because I honestly was like, the screenshots made it look a little ho-hum, I guess, but once you get into the action, it's just like, it's frantic and really challenging, even on easy mode. But yeah, let's get into it. So Rin, yeah, is the, she's a purple-haired cool girl with a pair of guns and a dream. Really doesn't communicate too much in the story, but it does tell you that basically all the heroes of the last however long many years have grown old and fat and retired and all this other stuff, and so she wants to be a cool hero now. Maybe it's an allegory for the rise of female protagonists in video games. I feel like it might be. But either way, the game is not an intellectual product, so maybe I'm overanalyzing. So the thing to note about Bleed is that it's a run and gun, infinite ammo, thank God. And
fuck, sorry.
It's okay. Just expel mucus all over this review, why not?
Oh God. That might be the first time I've ever sneezed on the show, by the way.
Yeah, there's a mute button there.
Anyway. I tried to hit it and it wouldn't click for me.
We've had all kinds of issues today.
Oh my God.
Just leave it in.
I'm going to. Fuck it. Yeah. At this point, fuck it.
Yeah. All right, Bleed on the Switch.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No, it's okay. So it's a run and gun. Think, I don't know, something like Contra 3. Just like real extreme, like all the directions sort of shooting things with like all kinds of cool weapons. And you get a limit of two that you can have in your inventory. But instead of losing them, you basically just keep going until you lose your life. And the weapons that you collect are purchased with in-game points, just like in One More Dungeon. So the more you play, the more arsenal you can afford and equip, which is really, really cool. So the main thing to note about this game is that it has a unique control scheme. I was honestly ill-prepared for it, but the game gives you a nice little tutorial through the first part of the first dungeon. So the shoulder buttons, the trigger buttons, you know, the big ones, mm-hmm. your RL ZRZL, something like that. The right one is actually your jump button, and the control stick on the right side is actually your shooting button. You just point it in a direction, and she just auto-shoots in that direction.
Nice.
So there's no aiming and firing, it's just firing and then aim sort of after the fact. So that maybe tells you a little bit about how fast the action in this game can go. Your jump, by the way, is really cool because not only do you get a really good wall jump, you also get a triple jump. That is say, not like usual Metroidvanias where you get the double jump. You get jump once and then one and then two and then three. And you know, you can go sailing out of the screen if you want. And in each one, you can control the direction of the jump. Basically, you're with the left stick controlling the trajectory of the jump. So you're kind of aiming your gun while aiming your jumps. And here's one of the best parts. The left trigger goes into a limited amount of bullet time where you get to slow down the action and your character still moves, I think, much faster than the action compared to when everything's moving at the regular speed. So there's a hail of bullets coming at you. You can slow it down to bullet time, triple jump across the bullets, and be firing at the enemy this entire time.
Nice.
So, yeah, you get to pull off moves like that, like even in the first level. So that makes me really excited for what's in the late game. Having said, that's where the challenge comes in, is because you really have to be acrobatic and you have to be on top of your aiming and shooting game in order to, you know, make a lot of headway in this one. And the boss fights are really big and epic. The first boss is a blob, I guess, which is the sixth greatest hero in the world. All right. And so you have to shoot this blob that eventually splits into, you know, different little blobs and things like that. And it has all these like moves and things like that that you have to dodge very creatively, because the enemies do a whole lot of damage to your character. Fortunately, once you get into the groove of like beating these levels over and over again, to gain more gamer points, you can purchase more health points, and so you can eventually become quite the tank. But by that time, you're probably going to be good enough to really fly. But yeah, things like just such a checklist of cool things in this game. You start off with the rocket launcher, and it is infinite ammo again. It's just slower than the double pistols. The first mini boss that you fight, not even the proper boss in the fight, is a helicopter.
Nice.
Shooting like missiles at you like constantly reminded me a lot of the first stage of Journey to Silius. And yeah, just like all the things that you can buy, like you can buy a shotgun, which is super powerful, but the bullets don't even reach the end of the screen, so it kind of gives you a little more of a melee style thing that you can do. And it's really wide range too, so it's a nice like spread weapon. And again, I was really impressed with the way this game played. Like it did not look like it was going to be this cool to play. Having said, the look of the game probably could be a little bit better. The first stage is a rainy, dark, like opulent mansion is literally what it's called. And I was just like, man, this could look better. It looks like, it looks like it basically is a poster board for I am an indie game, like for the backgrounds, you know?
Yeah.
But, that's probably just because a lot of the platformers I've been playing lately have had such creative looking things. But having said, that doesn't detract from anything. That's literally just like the smallest complaint one can ever make about something. And then the second stage has you down in a cave and it's the same story, you know? But like I said, the enemies look good. The action looks good. The hero looks good. The sound is great. The soundtrack is really killer. It's kind of an 8-bit, wooshy, bassy chiptune affair. And I really quite was enamored by it. And so that was enough to win me over for sure.
Nice. So $15 on the Switch. What do you think?
$15. Yeah, I think this one could be a classic. It definitely hits all the right notes. I think that like future games from this developer are going to be like really awesome. So they should definitely be supported at this venture. This is the kind of game that I think people are going to play and try to be the best at. Like it's definitely, it has a lot of room for, trying to be the best one at it. And like I said, it took me a while to beat the first level on normal mode. And then there's two difficulties above that and they're all worth more and more points. So that's even better. So yeah, great. You get a lot of good stuff in this game for $15. So I say buy it.
Nice. I also recommend that you check out the AGDQ or just GDQ in general speedruns for both Bleed and Bleed 2.
Oh, nice. I didn't know there was a Bleed 2.
Yeah. Bleed 2 is actually hitting, I think, Xbox, probably PS4 early next year. And then I'm sure Switch will be sometime behind as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it figures that like all these awesome games that are coming out on the Switch have been like, you know, tried and tested on all the other systems.
Yeah, so you could, Switch is getting, like, the best versions because they're all out and patched and updated. And
I know. I, like, every single game I've played on the Switch so far, I've just been like, what is this? This is awesome.
Oh, man. Anyway, last game that you're here to talk about is called Super Hydora, developed by Locomolito and Grisor87, published by AB Light, released December 13th on PS4 and Vita for $19.99. An evil force has launched an invasion over the Omios star?
Omios?
Oh, one of them. We already went over the pronunciation stuff earlier in the show.
Yeah, really?
Only you, the most skilled and deadly pilot in the galaxy, can face the dreadful menace of the Meropchians. Again, words. Biomechanical creatures set in a ruthless war of conquest. Equip your ship, select a route, and flight and fight planet by planet against the hordes of Meropchians. Chris, what'd you think of Super Hydora?
I think that description of it is every bit as, like, unpronounceable to us American folk as Cursed Castilla, which is the last game from AB Light that I reviewed. Okay, so Super Hydora is one of the most hyped games for me for 2017, because through my music club on Facebook, I know one of the AB Light people. I think he's the artist and programmer. Alberto Gonzalez, who used to compose, like, all these really awesome game soundtracks for Infogrames and things like that. So I have a little bit of a personal stake in this, and I did request this game specifically, and just like Cursed Castilla, which I played and loved. And yes, this is basically the horizontal shooter. Like, it takes every awesome bit of the 16-bit era of shooters and, like, basically ramps it up as high as it'll go. So it, fans of, like, Gradius 3 and Darius Twin, I would say I definitely got a Darius vibe from this game most of all. But yeah, if you play Darius Twin, Supernova, Gradius 3, this is the spiritual grandbaby of those games, and it is amazing. So basically, you've got your little ship, you know, and you shoot around and things like that, dodge the enemies. They add a whole ton of other aspects into this, such as, like, there's secrets in every level that you're supposed to find, and they usually involve, like, a lot of death-defying things. Again, the soundtrack, incredible. It's really, really good. But yeah, the power-up system is basically, it's a lot like Darius. Like, you get your different colored, power-ups for your different, like, power-up things. Like, you know, you can get a shield, your speed up boost, your actual fire boost, things like that. And, yeah, like, the main thing about this game, of course, is the insane amount of challenge. And, of course, the game ranks you based on how well you did. And this game clearly knows its audience because it even has bonuses for people who can get through the stages without taking a single hit. And so, you know, good luck to those folks.
For the masochists out there.
Yeah, for the masochists. Other cool things about this game versus, like, a 16-bit game is that it has voice acting. And everyone has an accent that makes me think that it's probably the developers because I think they're based in Spain. But yeah, basically this is, like, if you were looking for a classic scrolling shooter on the PS4, which honestly I was kind of surprised that they're a little rare on that system. But yeah, like, this is essentially about as good as you can get, I'd say.
Nice. So $20, your official verdict?
Well, obviously, $20, I would normally be like, well, I don't know, because, you know, it's a game, blah, blah, blah. No, 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 go ahead and get it. If you're a shmup fan, this is like, the game to get. Like I said, it's super fun, and for somebody like me who's obsessed with, like, Gradius and Darius all throughout the 16-bit era, this is the game that will bring you home.
Awesome. Plus, so, you're biased as hell.
I am so biased on this game. I just really, really wanted to play it. No, but for real, it met every expectation I had about it. Like, I wouldn't care if it wasn't a good game.
Nice. Well, Chris, thank you as always for coming on and chatting about these games. Do you have any final thoughts to sum everything up?
I don't know. I'm just thinking of Super Hydro now. I'm like Googling screenshots of the game from parts I haven't gotten to yet. And I'm like, ooh, that looks nice. I don't know. Go don your ugly Mario Christmas sweaters and your really awesome ones and enjoy the holidays.
All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called Ultimate Chicken Horse, developed and published by Clever Endeavor Games. Released December 15th on Xbox One for $14.99, previously available on PS4 and Steam. Planned for a Switch release as well, not sure when. Ever wish you were a wall-jumping, arrow-dodging, trap-setting horse, besting your animal pals in a race through the peril-laden obstacle course that you all built together? Wish granted. Our good friend Royal Sefton's checking this one out. Royal, how are you doing?
Good.
So, dude. First question off the bat, which animal did you prefer?
Oh, well, I played as the chicken. That's because I got a football helmet for him.
Nice.
So it didn't help at all because he'd get hit with an arrow or something and he'd still die. So the football helmet was mostly decorative. But yeah,
the goggles, they do nothing.
My kids had... Yes, I know. The goggles do nothing. My kids jumped in and played the game, and they had very, very particular interest in picking their animals first. So it was either the chicken or the sheep. So I went with the chicken.
Nice.
But we unlocked a couple more. We ended up with a chameleon. The chameleon's awesome.
I ended up unlocking all of the animals myself. I enjoyed the squirrel the most. I seem to go back to the squirrel a lot, although I did like the elephant as well. I'm not sure if you got the elephant yet.
I heard about the elephant because that was like part of the newest update.
So, oh, was it?
Because I already had the PC version. I didn't get much of a chance to play it, but I was reading through the notes and I saw, aha, they just added an elephant. Sweet.
Nice.
Do they have a moose? Did you find a moose in there?
No.
They need to do a moose so you can have moose and squirrel.
They do. They really do. But anyway, for the people who don't know what Ultimate Chicken Horse is, what is this game? We should probably get to that first, huh?
Yeah, it might be helpful. Okay, Ultimate Chicken Horse. It's a couch game, but you can play it online too. And you have this these different backdrops. You have a farm or rooftops in a city skyline, or this old windmill, or a pyramid on what looks like a miniature golf course. And you have to get from point A to point B. You got the start box where you and your other animal frenemies are going to start. And then you got this goal at the other end, this red flag. You have to find a way to it. And usually it's an impossible journey the way that the level is laid out. Like you'll have a grain thresher in the farm, and if you try to make that jump, you'll get chewed up by the grain thresher. Or if you try to leap between the two buildings and rooftops, you'll obviously plunge to your death. Usually making a sound kind of like the horse that I tried very poorly to imitate earlier. So you end up with these parts, and you get a new part each round. You have to pick out of this party box as quickly as you can, because only one person or one player per part. You have to grab it and go, and then you put it somewhere on this level, and it's kind of laid out like a grid. So it lines up with a part of the grid, you put it in place, and now you have this platform you can jump on, or you have this L beam that you can jump on or bounce off, because you can do wall jumping and stuff to help you get to the end of the level. But it gets interesting because they start adding traps, like crossbows that shoot arrows at you, or looks like it's like a pitching machine, or there's a paper airplane machine. You can ride the paper airplanes for a while, but they crumple easily. Just all kinds of fun things to sort of change it up and hopefully lay a trap for whoever else you're competing against to get to that goal.
Buzz saws and wrecking balls and hockey puck shooting machines.
Yes, the hockey puck. And that thing is fast, too.
I fucking love the hockey puck thing, too. Every time I see that, I get it, and I put it right near the exit, and it fucks everyone up.
You bastard.
Including myself. I want to put that out there. I fuck myself over just as much as everybody else.
Yep. One of the best joys of this game is setting a trap and then finding out, oops, that wasn't so smart, as you keep getting chewed up by it. It's hilarious. But you also get some other stuff. You can get some coins, which add to your score as you cross the line. It's got a cool cool scoring system I'll go into next. You can get teleports. You can get fans that help you levitate. Platforms, but they have propellers on them, and if you touch the wrong side of it, and that is you jump into the propeller, you will die a horrible, violent death.
Well, I know that the most dickish thing I did with a platform, the propeller platform, I put it upside down.
Yes, I did that to my kids. That pissed them off bad.
And I was able to pull off the jump over it onto a different platform. Everybody else, they just kept trying to jump on the propeller blade like morons.
Yeah, don't do that. Yeah, don't do that. No.
Geniuses. Geniuses.
Yeah, no, it's a kick. It's an absolute kick. So when you get to the flag, that's not the end of the game, because you got to keep getting these parts. So you do multiple rounds. And at the end of every round, it does a score tally. Now, you might get no points if everybody crosses lines. Too easy. You gotta shake it up a bit. If everybody gets to the goal, nobody wins. If nobody gets the goal, nobody wins. But then you do get a scoring system based on when you hit that flag. You get points for crossing. You get points for being first. You get bonus points if you're the only one to cross. You get points for every time one of your traps takes down one of your opponents. And as my son discovered, if you start losing and losing and losing, and then you turn around, you get a comeback bonus if you pass.
The underdog bonus.
Yeah. Yeah. And it all looks like hand drawn ink, you know, this like bar graph thing. You have to cross the finish line on this bar graph. So there's not really like a number score, but you can visually see, you know, how close you are to winning. And you only have so many turns, and then whoever has the highest score wins if you don't already hit that finish line.
And it's fucking fun too. I think that's the most important thing, is that this game is ridiculously over the top, addictive, and fun.
Yes, absolutely right. You know, it's one of those games that we couldn't put down. You know, my kids are yelling and screaming at each other, which is probably the only way we have to end the game, is by saying, okay, you guys need a break.
But like your time out in the corner, you're crying. I think this is our last round. And I was like, yeah, yes. I guess so. After what, 3 hours we were playing online together?
Oh man, we put in
crazy
a good
like
of time
that.
Before.
It, because yeah. We, you know, we want to test out the online play, the game. We need to stress, this is either local party game or online party game. There is zero single player content in this.
That is correct.
We have to make sure we stress that. Zero single player.
Yes. The closest thing to that is that there is a free play mode. So you can change modes in the game. There's a challenge mode. There's the party mode, which is what we played mostly. There's creative mode, and there's free play mode. In creative mode, you get to pick which part you want anytime. Whenever you have a new round, instead of getting the party box, you only have an assortment of a few different things to choose from. You have the entire trove of things to choose from, but only one part per round. Now, free play, you can theoretically do a single player game, although I don't know why you'd want to, in free play mode, where you create your own obstacle course from start to finish using an infinite number of parts. So you can, it's kind of like building your own level, which actually there is that too. And in that, you can actually do that single player, but then there's nothing to do. Yes. Basically, except to maybe practice your wall jumps, practice dodging certain traps, try out traps, things like that. So, yeah, otherwise it is very much a party game, whether you do it online or you do it, you know, with you know, in meat space.
Meat space.
Meat space, yes.
And then even cooler, meat space. Even cooler, you can mix it. You can have, you know, two or three local people go online and play with a stranger or two.
That is exactly right. That is exactly right. And that's how we did that. Got our four-player game going that way.
Indeed. You and your two kids, and then me and my cats watching me, all playing online together. And for the most part, me kicking your ass.
Yes, yes. Hats off to you. You did a great job, especially considering that I could observe that there were occasional like network hiccups that would cause you to fall to your death in hilarious ways. So.
I do want to, you mentioned a network hiccup. I don't know if that's a network thing, because when Ashley and I were playing together, I played with my wife a bit. I noticed every now and then I would see a little hiccup or a little, I don't know if it's lag or if it's a frame dip. I don't think it could be a frame rate thing because of, you know, it's not a very intensive game, but no. you would just see things hesitate for a nanosecond, but it would be enough to throw you off. So I'm not sure if that was a network thing or if there might just be something fucky with the code that it just acts up every now and then. It wasn't enough to deter me from playing, clearly, because I've still been playing it like crazy. But it was a nuisance when it would happen every now and then.
Yeah, I mean, and it helps that the game is so stinking fun. You're not really playing it for it's not a competitive game in the, you know, like league sense or something, obviously. So, you know, those little hiccups now and then, they're bearable. It's all in good fun. But that's interesting to note. I didn't know if maybe it was just the circumstances of my own network messing with me. Like, I was even streaming a movie later that night, and it got interrupted in the middle of it, and it was streaming off of a server in house here, so I don't know what was going on. I thought maybe that could be related, but if you're seeing the same problems I'm seeing, who knows, maybe there's going to be a netcode patch for it later. What I do know is it didn't really impede us from having fun. It was just one of those things that came up occasionally.
It was something that leveled the playing field, I guess.
Sure, yeah, it let me win a couple times. Thank you. You bastard.
I know achievement level or achievement whores out there are going to wonder about the achievements in the game. This is going to be a very long completion, a long, grindy completion. There's achievements in the game like place 1,000 traps.
Mm-hmm.
Play 100 games online, play 50 games online, unlock all the outfits, all the stages, get hit with hockey pucks and arrows separately 100 times each, kill people with traps 100 times. Like, there's a lot of grindy achievements, which in most games would possibly be a problem. But in this game, because it is so goddamn fun and addictive, it's just going to come through natural play, I think.
Absolutely right. Yeah, it's just gonna flow. You can't get enough of this game. It's so awesome.
So overall, I gotta know, for the $15 asking price, what is your thoughts on Chicken Horse?
Oh, for $15, man, it's a fucking steal. Seriously, the only way you wouldn't want to spend $15 on this game is if you have no friends and nobody to play with. Because the free play mode and single player obviously is no way to play the game. Yeah. But if you've got folks you want to play with on the couch, or even if you just want to pick up a game with random folks you don't know, dude, so much fun. $15 is a bargain. It's a definite buy it.
Agree. It is an absolute blast. Multiplayer online games like this, we usually do have the whole, you know, you might want to try it if you don't have any friends to play with. But because of, you know, this is one of the few games that I was playing online with random people. And I don't do that anymore because there's just, you know, horrible people in the world. But I just, right. I want to keep playing more Ultimate Chicken Horse. And the best way to do that is to play online with random people. And
definitely
fuck them all up.
Yeah, that's half the joy. Although I gotta, you know, recall some of the challenges we had, since one of my kids is pretty new to platformers, games, or life. He's four. He likes to put things in very inconvenient places, making the game almost impossible to play. So one of the challenges you were running into with random people was them doing the exact same thing. So you got to feel my pain firsthand, right?
Yeah. What was it like? Every time we would play with your kids, I would just be like, Royal, blow your kids' stuff up because they keep blocking the path.
And you'd hear coming up through the mic, you can't do that! That's illegal!
I don't think I mentioned this while we were playing, but the one time that your daughter screamed, I don't know, like, if your son hit her or if they were just arguing, but one of her eardrum shattering screams scared my cat to the point that he ran out of the room.
No, you did not mention that. That is awesome.
Yeah. Headset on, and it was apparently loud enough. He was sleeping on my lap that she screamed and he was gone, like sprinting out of the room. It was hilarious. It was just, it hurt because he clawed the fuck out of my leg when he sprinted away.
I'm sorry.
It was worth it. It was worth it.
Yeah. Oh, such a good game, man.
Oh,
good
times. Yeah. We got to play this more. You want to play this more?
And we do. We got to play this more.
Awesome. So final thoughts on this. Sum everything up. All right. Next game to talk about is called Boombox Blue, developed and published by Varget P. I'm still terrible with that name. It released December 11th on Steam for 99 cents. Boombox Blue is a frenzied skill-based physics game. This is what you get if you merge Tetris with physics and throw some bombs into the mix. Tom Miller's covering this one. Tom, how are you doing?
Oh, things are going just fine today. Yeah.
How do you pronounce that guy's name or the company?
Viragtp?
Viragtp. There's a G, a T, and a P all in a row.
Yeah. It's not Viragtp. It's not meant to be pronounced by mortals. It's one of those Lovecraftian names.
Probably.
Or Swedish or something. I don't know.
But at least we know how to say Boombox Blue.
Boombox Boo. Damn it.
So, tell me about Boombox Blue. What is this game?
Yeah, so Boombox Blue, you know, this is actually not the first time I've reviewed one of this company or person's games on here. I did Fjong and Fur Up, which we talked about, and it's kind of, I mean, it's different from either of those, but they tend to do these really simple kind of one-off games that are that have like a lot more of a casual appeal to it, and this is no different. So basically it is you move your character around just with the mouse and you try to dodge blocks as they fall from the sky, and they fall faster as it goes, and yeah, if you run into blocks too many times you die, and that's pretty much the whole game. But within that framework, I mean, it's one of those games that, like, I played it for a few minutes one time and I didn't think it was that great, but then the other day, like, I'd just, like, gotten off after working for a long time and I was just, like, kind of brain fried a little bit, and I decided to load it back up and played it for, like, 45 minutes, and it's just, like, one of those games that you can kind of turn your brain off and play.
Which we need more of. It's good to have games that you just fire up and you don't need to invest yourself and your emotions and your heart and soul. You could just have fun.
It's nice, yeah, because I've been like playing Cuphead on expert mode and I was not up for that at the time. But yeah, but this game, I mean, even though it is so simple, it does have some nice little twists to it. As the game goes on, it has different gimmicks that show up. It darkens part of the screen, or it adds different wind patterns, and you level up your own. Like, you can, the gimmick is that you can clear the screen with bombs. And so you pick up bombs along the way, and you can drop them and blow up different parts of the block, you know, tower that builds up over time. And it introduces new types, like some of them are different shapes, or they bounce around the screen. And I don't know. It's all really simple, but it's just it's a nice, relaxing game. I really do. Like, this company is, like, all about the long tail, kind of. They make, like, a bunch of really cheap, simple games. I think it'd be great if they were to kind of, like, polish them all up and release them as, like, a minigame compilation. But, like, even this, like, it's so simple, but it's, like, it's a 99-cent game, so it's a fuck it, why not, but it's also, it's a fun game, and you can easily just pick it up and play it. As far as just, like, relaxing games that you don't need to think about go, I think it's a quality one.
Nice. I kind of figured at 99 cents, this is the epitome of fuck it, why not.
Yeah, exactly.
And I know Plantera, one of the other games that the guy did a couple of years ago, just got a Switch release, which we'll be talking about in a couple of minutes on the show when Purnell drops by. But I think it would be cool to see, you know, like, take Boombox Blue, take Tap Heroes, take Loot Hero, take Fjong, just toss them all into a compilation, price it for $10, throw it on consoles. Sounds like it could make some money.
Yeah, I'd check it out.
Same, so would I. Because we check out all these guys' games.
Yeah, I know.
So I guess your overall verdict is the fuck it, why not?
Yeah.
Cool. Sounds good. Short, sweet, to the point.
Yep.
So how you doing? I feel like we have all this extra time.
I know. This is like the shortest review of all time here. Yeah, I'm doing okay. I'm still in Whamageddon.
Have not been whammed yet?
I have not been whammed, nice. And I've been in some pretty suspenseful situations. Like, I went into the grocery store the other day, and Last Christmas was playing, and so I was like, damn it, I'm out. And then I realized that it was a cover, and so it's like, the hope remains.
Yeah, the closest I got was I was in the store Five Below, And they were playing the Jimmy Eat World cover of the song.
I did not even know that that existed.
Yeah, it's a really good cover, too. I normally hate most Christmas music, which is why I do the stupid Christmas music I do on the show. But I think the Jimmy Eat World cover is pretty solid.
Nice.
Yeah, good stuff. Cool. I guess we could stop killing time, huh?
I mean, we could.
So any final thoughts to sum it all up?
Well, my final thoughts to sum it all up was going to be the Wham thing, so so I'm out of ideas.
Sorry.
That's okay.
All right, next game to talk about is called Dynasty Feud, developed and published by Kaya Game Studios. It released December 12th on the PS4 for $14.99, previously on Steam. Dynasty Feud is a competitive, team-based, fast-paced platform brawler for 2 to 4 players. Play either local or online and show off your skills with 40 characters, one-hit kills, multiple fighting skills, and a lot of style. Pernell Vaughn is checking this one out. Pernell, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. This evening is winter incarnate. You know, I had some suicide wings earlier, so it's like I'm sleepy, but my stomach wants to burst from within. So it's an odd juxtaposition.
Suicide wings. Work.
Yeah, that's right. The hot stuff.
Those sound comfortable.
Okay. They warm the pit of your stomach. 80s warmth.
Oh, man. So what is Dynasty Feud?
So Dynasty Feud is a game I did. It's like, I feel like I say this a lot, but this is one of those games where I was like, I'm not sure how I'm going to feel about this. It doesn't sound that hot. I was wrong. This game is cool. So good way to put it is it's a less technical Smash Brothers, more party-based, but and it has a gameplay style that is very unlike it, because, like, I mean, it's the only thing that you have in common with Smash, now I think about it, is the character-based, you know, knockout, takedown, 2D platform brawler. But it's less of a brawler due to the fact that everything's a one-hit kill, and every character is very unique. The way the game typically plays is you choose a family. So it might be like a family of cowboys, or a family of Halloween freaks, or a family of people from like the Genghis Khan era. And you make them fight each other one at a time. And if you hit the person, that family member gets knocked out and a new family member comes in to take their place. And once you take out the entire family on a player's side, that player loses and you win. Mm. You go, huh?
I just said, huh.
Yeah, it's surprisingly cool. So, like, for example, my favorite team was a group called the Cart Wrongs. Get it? Because they're not right. Essentially, they're essentially cowboy folk. It's 5 of them. One is like a gala dancer. One is a generic cowboy. One's like a sheriff. One guy is dressed as a cactus for some reason.
Did you say share?
Sheriff.
Oh, I thought you said share. Like, I can turn Rich. Back time.
Blow shit up. But like, so all these characters in the family typically has like a defining characteristic, I'll say. So for example, it might be a family where their primary focus is ranged attacks, or another family whose primary focus is melee attacks, but they might get like a second hit that they can get because they wear a helmet or something. Crazy stuff like that. So the Cart Wrongs, one family member gets a Gatling gun that they have to kind of stand and hold the charge, and he fires it off. And then you got like another family member has a gun that fires like similar to the double in Gradius, mm-hmm. and up like at a 45 degree angle two ways. But his kavat is like every character gets two moves, like a square attack and a triangle attack. But some of them, like this that guy with the two bullets that come out, his second attack is to reload his gun because his gun is good enough that he doesn't deserve another attack. And you have to balance out how many of your bullets you burn through. Some guys get like projectiles to throw and then pick up off the ground to get them back. Crazy stuff like that. My favorite guy was a character who drops proximity mines around the map. And if the person gets too close, they'll blow up, or you can detonate them with your secondary attack and they all just go up at once.
Oh, nice.
But it was really cool. Like, the only thing I didn't like about the game, well, let me go a little bit further than this. So I had a great time with it. Like, I played it with my nephew a little bit. And I would have loved to play 4 players, but obviously getting that couch co-op is a little bit on the challenging side in this day and age, but that's life. But there was 2 other modes that we didn't bother with a ton because it's more of the same game. It's just the way that they portray it. So there's team battle, which, as you can probably guess, it's 2-on-2. So my family and Jim's family versus Joe's family and Catherine's family. And this is basically like a battle royale with two teams against each other. Then there's the all-star mode, which I thought was a pretty cool thing once you get used to what the characters do. Once you've gotten accustomed to the game, all-star mode is basically every character, but you can select from anyone from any family and mix and match them. Mm-hmm. And similar to, what was it? It was like an old fighting game that did this. I want to say it was maybe like one of the Street Fighter Alphas or something, but I don't remember. But basically, each character is in a tier. No, it was King of Fighters. That's what it was. One of the King of Fighters games. Every character is in a tier, and ranging from 1 to 3 stars. Every team has a max allotment of 5 characters, and like I think it's 10 stars, maybe. So, for example, you can't have more than 2 3-star characters on your team. But you also can't really hold more than 2 3 stars in a 2-star. You'll max out. But you could have 5 1 stars if you wanted to. And you can mix and match to say, okay, this is my team of efficiency. And they still only get 1-hit kills. So you got to be smart about the fact that if your team's going to have, you know, less players on it, you better be really good with the abilities that they come with so you can last longer than the other guy.
Yeah, so I'm guessing the stars means they just have better abilities?
Yeah, pretty much.
Gotcha.
Like, I'm going to wager that proximity mind guy is a 3-star because if he's not, holy crap. I think that was a glorious attack. I had to stop picking him because my nephew was getting frustrated.
You dick.
I am an asshole. Kids, adults, don't matter. I want to win. But the only thing that made me sad about this game, though, is that there's no single player mode. There's a training mode, which is nice, and there's the online component. And I hate the fact that I have to say this, but it's a reality of the times. Regardless of how good the game is, in my opinion, it's niche, very niche. And when it comes down to something like that, I typically don't want to be like, well, you can find people online to play. If you want to buy a game like this, you probably should buy it with the intent of being able to play couch versus, but maybe get some online if you're lucky. Because I definitely tried to get online with it multiple times and failed each time. Admittedly, the game's still kind of new, but even still, like, just by virtue of what I'm used to dealing with when it comes to the online verse and how quickly games are forgotten and which ones tend to stick around, it's hard to say, oh yeah, you'll just find somebody online to play with.
Yeah, was it a server thing that you couldn't connect, or was it just there was no one playing?
I mean, the way it seemed to work was you pick online, and then you choose your team and press X, and then you just sit there. Like, for all I know, it could have been something like it was expecting me to have more than one player on my TV before it would go there, but that would be dumb, because it would kind of defeat the purpose of having online in the first place.
Yeah.
So I pretty much pressed OK with my team, and then it just stayed there. Like, it was waiting. Like, it didn't even say, like, hey, looking for players. It gave me no indication that it was searching. It gave me no indication that I was waiting for more input. It was just, okay. And I just sat there and waited. And when nothing happened, I was like, well, I guess it's not doing what it's supposed to do. And I backed out. So I did that at least twice on 2 different occasions, trying to see if I can get people online to play. And I got no luck on each occasion. Early East Coast evening hours, though. So we're not talking like midnight. Oh, why is no one online? But I was on there about like 8 o'clock or so, you know, prime hours for gaming, and no luck. And that's the sad reality of it. But the game itself, if you can get that group of people together, and I know that there are some people who still have that weird magic where they know humans that like video games that live in their city. How bizarre. You. You kidding me? I got to drive out of state for all my gaming friends. Shit. My YouTube buddy on show, he's out of state. I drive to see his ass. I guess. Locally, nobody wants to play video games. It's like, well, we want to play Cornhole. Cornhole's fun. I'm like, no!
No, God.
I got a friend who bought a Switch in 4 games. I'm like, okay, cool. He'll play Splatoon and stuff with me. His ass is still playing Diablo 3. Like, what the fuck are you doing? You've got a brand new system with 4 games. You're playing the same game you've been playing since 2012 when that game came out? I'm like, I don't even get the appeal, but that's another story. That's another topic. But the point is, getting local people to play games is really freaking hard. But if you are one of those lucky people who can get that party going here in the even better on a regular basis, this game, I know you gotta do the line, so you should probably start the lineup. You, like Joe.
Me? What did I do?
You know, the usual, the soul for da 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 da. Do you want it? Yeah, the line.
Oh man. Okay then. $15. What are your thoughts on it?
There we go. If you have couch co-oping buddies who like to come by every once in a while and get their game on with you, in my opinion, you really can't go wrong with this game. It's simple, but it's got a little bit of depth in the form of mastering the characters. And I feel as though this is a game that would be good for picking up for like 20-minute bouts or something with each other and then putting it down and coming back later.
But so, if you glad I didn't mute my phone there.
But in the event that you unfortunately are kind of a lone gamer or multiplayer is a rarity for you at your house or at a friend's house, then unfortunately I would not recommend this because you're going to be banking on online exclusively for experience to play the game. And that's a hard thing to bank on with this game. So.
Gotcha. I'm still wondering if there was some kind of issue that you couldn't get an online game, or it'd be hilarious if you just didn't hit the A button again, or the X button, sorry.
It would be pretty hilarious and depressing, because in my brain, I'm like, oh, I'd mash the fuck out of that button. But if it didn't work, it didn't work, but don't get me wrong, I'd be, as embarrassing as it would be, I'd be happy if they came back and said, oh, dude, you're supposed to hit X and then circle to confirm, which would make no sense, but hey, it could be something weird like that.
True. If nothing else, it doesn't sound like the online portion is very intuitive for getting a game going.
Oh, it totally wasn't. Unless there's like a magic menu that I missed out on, it is not.
Although I will say it's pretty cool that we're talking about two completely different multiplayer-only games on this episode, because earlier when our friend Royal was on, we covered Ultimate Chicken Horse, and despite the fact that that's either local multiplayer or online multiplayer only, we were both emphatically recommending that one.
Exactly. That's the sad reality of it, because like, you sounds like you have the same problem. Like, and I reviewed a game earlier this year on your show called Crawl, which at least had options for AI.
Yeah.
So you could practice and stuff, but it's another case of that one had no online at all. It was just, if you got no friends at home, fuck. But... the game itself is just so good. Like, this game this year has been really good for couchy multiplayer games, and I am outside of the proper generation to get that on. Good Jiminy Christmas.
Blows my mind that there's a brawler game, a fighting brawling game, that doesn't have AI.
No AI. I'm going to guess maybe they had a small studio and they didn't really have the guy that could sit there and config AI for a game.
Possibly. But from, you know, all the people that we've talked to on the show, everyone says online is the hardest stuff to do. And that's why so many games don't have online, because it's hard and it's expensive. But just not having AI opponents feels very odd.
Well, that's going to be a thing the guy comes back and says too. Like, well, funny thing, if you just press option... triangle, triangle, square, and circle. We've activated the AI in the game. Like, you can get it.
It's a cheat code.
Probably something crazy like that. If you want to unlock AI, do these things. Oh, one thing I need to mention, I forgot about the game to say. I explained how the entire game works, but I forgot about the fact that there are like about 8 or so families that you can choose from, but at the start you can only pick 2. And as you do matches, you level up in the game. It's like a generic, hey, keep playing this game to earn more stuff sort of process. And it unlocks more families and it unlocks more stages for those people to battle on. So that's the progression mechanic for the game.
Gotcha. Well, hopefully they end up bringing the game to other platforms, because I think I was telling you earlier this week, it's on Steam and PS4, and those are the two systems I don't care about.
Man, that thing, I feel like... at least the Switch, for sure.
Seriously, local multi-Switch play would be incredible for this. Go to MAGFest, get a big group of people together, and just play.
And when it's a game like this where it also the button requirement is minor, that means you can do a Joy-Con split instead of having a bunch of four like full-set controllers.
Kind of how Bomberman works. I don't know how easy that would be to program, though.
I mean, it's not the really program. I mean, I'm guessing that's all part of the system's design. Like, once you tap into it, the system handles setting people up on multiple Joy-Cons. All you got to do is give it the allow it to do so.
Nah, I don't know. I'm dumb, so I don't know.
Yeah, ain't too much further off. I'm just guessing.
Talking about Switch stuff, the next game to talk about is called Plantera Deluxe, developed by Verocht P, I think. We went over this earlier. I don't know how to say that name.
Oh, elegant.
I don't know how to say that name, and it, we keep covering the games, and I don't know how to publish by Rattalaika Games, released December 7th on the Switch for $4.99. In the world of Plantera, you grow your own garden, breed plants and animals to earn coins with their produce. Use the coins to buy new plants, animals, items, and expansions, earn more and more, and create your dream garden. Welcome to Plantera. Pernell, what'd you think of this one?
I was extremely disappointed in the fact that there was very little metal references in this game. I was looking. There was nothing. No fire and brimstone stage you can unlock. You know, horns, except on a cow. I mean, nothing. It was just farming. Just bountiful farming. God, Jesus. But...
I'm so glad that when I covered it on Steam, me and Chris weren't the only ones making, like, Pantera references and hopes that it's like a vulgar display of farming or something like that.
Led the pigs to slaughter. But not really slaughter. They just dug up boots. It was nice.
Instead of cowboys from hell, it's literally just cows.
Just a cow. From a very nice place.
So what did you think of Plantera Deluxe?
It's hard to say. You've known me for a while, so you know I have likes, dislikes, and confused likes. Or confused dislikes, I'll say. For example, like I would say I don't like monetization in games in the sense that I don't like that endless hamster wheel of collect, collect, collect. But at the same time, I am very susceptible to collect, collect, collect. So it's a problem. This game doesn't make you buy stuff with your real money, so thank heavens for that shit. But it does kind of have this endless cycle effect where you start out with nothing. You have a barren field, some little blue dew with a sack, and some butterflies. And your goal is to pick up butterflies because for some reason butterflies are worth money. Then you take that money and you buy some carrots. And you plant the carrots in the ground. Your little man runs over, plucks the carrots, sacks them, gives you money. And if you feel as though your little sack man needs help, you can click on the screen and collect the carrots yourself and assist him. Get more money. Now you can plant radishes or a plant with tomatoes on it or a tree with oranges. What are these worth? You guessed it. Money. You take those things, take the money, put it in your bank. And what do you get? Pigs and dogs and meat. Shit. There's no meat in the game because this game is about happiness. But basically, the goofy way I'm explaining this game is that it's an endless cycle effect where you start out with nothing, you accrue money by harvesting what's available, and then taking that money to purchase more things that will allow you to harvest more things for more money. The categories that you can produce in are, I guess I would say, like garden growth, so like vegetation, like carrots and cabbage, stuff like that. Then there's bushes, which would they have things like I said, tomatoes and bell peppers. That would grow from a stalk. Then there are, trees. And trees would have fruit on them, mostly like cherries and oranges and pears. And then there are animals. Animals produce things in the sense of, like, say, a pig. I don't know why they did this, but pigs dig things up. A pig can find a boot. It can find a gold rock. It can find a pebble. And it can find an old shoe.
Maybe it's something that they're like trying to dig for truffles, but they're finding boots instead.
I think you're right. That's what it is. Now it makes more sense. Cause I was like, why is this pig digging up boots? And he'll make like an oink sound when he does. And you can get like a sheep that will find, shed wool, and that's worth money. And then the last category is kind of like side items, like a scarecrow to scare away magpies. Did I say magpies and scare? Yeah. Because the thing I forgot to mention is that as you produce things like fruits and vegetables and whatever, there are noises that will show up in the game. So if you plant carrots, rabbits will start showing up and trying to eat your carrots. You might get groundhogs that will pop up. And I don't know if they actually do anything bad, because I usually stop them in time, but I usually bop them in the head. And of course they give you money. If you have sheep and pigs, you'll draw foxes and wolves respectively. And you can tap on them with your controller or touchscreen to shake them off and make them go away. But you can also say buy a dog, and the dog will watch out over the sheep. So if the dog crosses paths with the fox or the wolf, it'll scare them off. You can get a scarecrow that will scare magpies away from certain areas of the garden. And then there's like a little few other things like manure, which will multiply how much everything's worth. And honestly, as it may sound, I don't pretty much explain the entire game. I think the one thing I may have missed is that as you grow things and plant things, you get money. You get experience points, which when you level up, you unlock more vegetation or more of that weird item or animal category. And once you max out all the things you earn, which is around like level 19 or so, you just start getting stars on top of the things you've already unlocked, which makes them worth more money. So you can just keep doing it forever and ever, ever and ever and goddamn ever. Like, that is literally the game. There are three soundtracks to it, like three tunes that can loop. You can't choose between them during the game, so once you pick one, you're locked, you're kind of stuck with it for the entire time you play. And they also have this weird mechanic where, well, it's not weird, it's just, I didn't expect it for this game, where you can use some of your in-game money to buy hour clock or time clocks, which can be used to make your workers work when you're not playing the game for a certain amount of time. So when I hung up the game today, I bought 3 hours worth of time. So it'll work for me for 3 hours with me not in the game, and I'll get to come back and see how much they've harvested. Whether I'll keep playing after that, I don't know. Because again, I started playing the game, and I wanted to see what I would unlock at different levels. But the game, I don't want to say it was, is it considered fun if you don't feel like you're doing anything, but at the same time, you're engaged to keep doing the nothing?
Well, let's not forget, this is pretty much like one of those idle clicker style games where there's not supposed to be a point. It's just supposed to be kind of like a kill a couple of minutes and relax kind of thing. It's, you know.
And I think you're right about that for sure. Like, it accomplishes that hook, line, and sinker. And in fact, that's probably the best way to describe the games that I have this hiccup for and why it's something I can definitely still review. It's just, I can't help it. The personal opinion has to creep in. It's like, it's just there. Why do I keep doing this? Why would I shut it off? You want to know why I was eating dinner late? That's why I was eating dinner late. Playing a goddamn game to like 9:30. I was like, I gotta stop and eat, but I gotta plant more trees so I can get more birds that I can smack out of the sky. Oh, look, a pig! Found the boot. That's worth some money. Gotta save up for that manure. Why?
It's like, God,
more money. The cycle just repeats. But
yeah, I mean, the game originally started as a $3 Steam game, so, I mean, the fact that it's now $5, it's a deluxe edition, which the deluxe version features the Christmas mode, it has a bigger garden, and it has the horse. The horse is only in deluxe.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that's nice, because the horse is pretty adorable.
See? So, it's not supposed to be, like, a massive action RPG, or it's supposed to be just a time killer. So, for $5... What do you think of this one?
Stop. Let me stop. Honestly, if it is your cup of tea to get, if you're in need or want of a game that is kind of just meant to be kind of relaxing, and you're planning to harvest, to get money, to wash, rinse, repeat, and the potential for failure is not, I think it's pretty much non-existent. I don't think you can fail at this game. It's just a relaxation effort. And if you will lift up what you're in the market for, like I would say, if you're in the Animal Crossing bubble, that's a good way to put it. If you're in the Animal Crossing bubble, but you want something a little lighter than that, where you don't have to be at a specific time of day, for example, then this game is a thing worth buying. It's $5. You'll get your fill out of it. You'll harvest 1 million coins, and you'll have, you know, 32 pastures that you've grown, and you might want more. In which case, hey, it never stops, so you can keep going. So I would say it's a good game for people in the Animal Crossing, or I just kind of want to relax and play a game that doesn't tax me. Go
around. So this kind of sounds like a fuck it, why not?
I like that's a much better way to put it. Yeah, more of that.
Have you had a fuck it, why not on this show?
I don't think I ever have. I'm always like one or, oh, I said, I almost say one of the, I'm very nuanced. Like a lot of, for example, you know, a lot of reviews, they might say, you should totally buy this game, or you should totally not buy this game. I try to be that guy where it's like, it's one thing if I flat out say, I want it, like if I personally want it. But I always try to say, this is the game for you if you have these tastes. But if you don't have these tastes, don't buy it. Unless the game is an outright turd, in which case I'm going to say, if you like shitty games, this is right up your alley. Or if you like a game that is faulty and flawed, buy this game. It's the most backwards way to sell the review game. If you like games that barely work, you should buy this game. But that's my thing is, like, even with a game like this where I'm like, it's not really my wheelhouse, I can see the value in it. And what it set out to do, I think it did its job well. Like, it's a game that I'm not going to sit there and say they decided they wanted to make a game that relaxed you and didn't tax you. And I played it, and I was relaxed, and I wasn't taxed. Fuck this game. They did a terrible job.
They did exactly what they said they were going to do, sons of bitches.
Exactly. What the fuck? I didn't come here. I came here for something you weren't selling. Like, no. You said what you wanted to just make. I bought the game. I liked it. Or I did what it was supposed to do, and it did it well. It's a good game for what it does. It's just not me game, but it could be you game. So try it out.
See, I don't even know if I ever even explained the fuck it, why not rating to you.
I'm not sure you did. I think you mentioned it to me before, but I just kind of figured it was like a...
It's something that's reserved for cheaper games that would normally get a try it, but it's cheap enough that fuck it, why not?
Oh, I got you. I can see that working, man, where it's like, yeah, it's $5. What's going to happen?
It's $5. Fuck it. Just get it.
If you play it for 30 minutes, you got your money's worth.
Yeah. You know? And you get a horse. You get the horse in the deluxe version for $5, so fuck it.
You won't get the horse in 30 minutes, but I can guarantee you, if you start the game up, you're going to play it for at least 30 minutes. That's a given.
Like, you got to work for that horse. They don't just give that shit out free.
They give it out free after a couple hours. You got to sit there and watch.
Got to save your coins. You got to collect some fucking apples for that horse.
Pro tip, though. Don't slouch on getting that manure. You'll waste a lot of time if you don't.
Nice. Anyway, one more game to talk about tonight, and that is called TeslaGrad, developed and published by Rain Games. This one released December 7th on the Switch for $14.99. A journey begins. A treacherous tower. Unravel its mysteries. Discover the secrets kept in the long-abandoned Tesla Tower. Magnetism and other electromagnetic powers will help you explore a non-linear world of beautiful hand-drawn environments in a steampunk-inspired vision of old Europe. Pernell, what did you think of TeslaGrad?
I think I'm happy that the press release description explained just as little as the game does. So the game is you are a man drops a kid off at an orphanage. Some seasons go by, and then the kid's running out of the house because people in, like, Gestapo suits are chasing him down the street. And he runs into this church, or I guess it's more of a chapel, and he finds a glove. That glove has the power of magnetism, and it allows him to manipulate polarities in an awesome way. So TeslaGrad is a puzzle platformer, and the goal is to, as Joe mentioned earlier, ascend a tower. For some reason, they kind of explain a story of sorts by way of collectible images, but you kind of have to get through the entire game and then piece them together to try to make sense like what they're trying to convey. But the actual experience of playing the game is you get this glove, which is the first item you get, and when you press one button, it allows you to punch with one polarity, and then the other button manipulates another polarity. And when you punch something that can be affected by it, it magnetizes the object, which, as you can probably wager by playing with Magnus in grade school, different polarities result in, you know, different polarities attract, similar polarities pull away from each other. And you will be manipulating the hell out of that throughout this adventure. Eventually you'll start getting weird items, which I don't want to go too much into because I know some people hate spoilers in their games, but you will eventually get different items that will allow you to manipulate magnetism in different ways with the environment or the character himself. And there's not much in the form of enemy opposition, though there are bosses you do start to fight. But enemies in the game proper, I feel like it's less about monsters attacking you, and it's just more about, hey, here's a bunch of obstacles. Get around them. And then something, holy crap, a big monster. You got to fight him. You got to beat him. But I don't want to say it's an easy game. It's not hard, but I will say that if you are seasoned with puzzle platformers, it won't tax you too much, but if you're the type of person that typically avoids these, you will be stumped because this is one of those types of games where I don't think you work with this type of gameplay too often. Super Magnetic Neo did it years ago on the Dreamcast. That is probably the last time I have seen a game work with this game concept before. It was that long ago. So I'm trying to think how to explain elsewise. The only collectibles in the game, aside from the actual power-up items, are the aforementioned cards that I brought up earlier. Each card, when you collect it, displays a section of, I guess, the story. You collect them out of order, so you'll kind of see things take place in an odd order of ways, and then when you get it done, you're like, oh, crap, what a nice storybook. You'll also come across, I guess it's like scrolls. The scrolls themselves are more so meant to be the mapped sections of the game, so when you find one, it'll just display more of the map of the world you're in. So that's really the game that I can think of. I'm trying to think of what other stuff might be worth explaining, because there's not a lot to explain about Tesla-Grey. Just that it's a great
game. Pretty much always called it like a combat-free Metroidvania where everything is done in puzzles.
Yeah, I like that phrasing. And that's very much what it is, because it's definitely Metroidvania. You'll get new abilities, which will allow you to access new areas within the castle. Every once in a blue moon, you will come across a character that you don't necessarily interact with, but will try to interact with you, I'll say more specifically. But you don't want to deal with that guy. He's a dick. but, it's pretty much what you just said there, that descriptive of it. So there's like, because there's no enemies in the game aside from bosses. There's a few, like, monstery things, but to my recollection, though, I also never let them really hit me. None of them can hurt you. You just use them to solve more puzzles. So, but yeah. I honestly think the game is a great time. I'm just a big fan of playing with magnets. So playing with them digitally.
Fucking magnets. Like, how do they work?
How do they work? Shit. Like a wizard did it. I enjoy playing. I like the idea of messing with magnetism. I like the idea of it doing it in a way that's not a normal for a game. These are there are power-ups in this game that I felt would have been awesome in like games like Zelda, for example. I think a Zelda game would do well with some of these abilities. But how much does it sell for on this system?
It's a $15 game. So for $15, what do you think?
I think this game is legit hot. If you want a puzzle platformer, you should buy this game. Especially the fact because it's on the Switch and I like being able to play it in handheld mode. It's just a good relaxing. There's a relaxing time, damn it. Relax. You don't have to worry about monsters beating you up, but at the same time, you work your brain a little to resolve mental conflict.
I don't know, man. Some of those collectibles are the furthest thing from relaxation that I could think. There's some tough shit in there. If you're going for all the collectibles and all the story, you're going to work your brain.
That is true. There's no walk in the park. But the thing to bring up, to mention right off the top, is that this is one of those games where they designed it where you can't get everything when you first see it. So sometimes you may come across an item. Don't overdo it. If you can't reach it, just leave it and come back because you're probably missing something. But all in all, though, yeah, you'll have a good time with this piece. Solid product.
And part of me thinks that the Switch might be one of the better platforms for this game because the Switch doesn't have any kind of achievement system to it. I know a lot of people are scared to start the game on PlayStation or on Xbox because all of the achievements, except for like, I think one or two in the game, are tied specifically to the collectibles.
For me, that's almost like a blessing, though, because I like getting collectibles, so I'm like, I'll do that.
But a lot of people are scared because, like, if they start the game and they're not good at getting the collectibles, oh my god, I can't get a completion on this.
Yeah, we gotta admit, though, if someone's truly feeling that way with the access to the internet, I don't know what to tell. This game, like, obviously, you want to try to get everything you can without help, but if you're, like, beating the game, it's like, crap, I want to get this, I need my platinum trophy or whatever. People have FAQ'd the hell out of this game. You can get they'll tell you how to get every single scroll, no problem. So that's not even a taxing anymore, but I do agree with you, even with that stated, that I have played Switch games where it's like, on one hand, I want trophies and achievements, but on the other hand, there's something kind of nice about not being beholden to them on a home console anymore.
Yeah.
Because that's one thing I like about 3DS and more so 3DS because Vita has trophies, but 3DS is like that. It's an escape from trophies and achievements. I just play games, and if I accomplish it because I damn well want to, not because there's a bauble in the corner telling me it's worth an arbitrary score. So,
yeah, as much as I love achievements, I love collecting them. I love, I'm creeping up on 400,000 for my achievement score.
Great Google mother.
Well, it's been, 10, 11 years since I've had my first 360?
Yeah, it's true. It's been around for a long time.
And, you know, there was a stretch of time where I was like, oh, I need to get all the achievements. I need to get as many as I can. I got to get them all. Got to get, I need my achievement scores.
You're the reason they bumped it to 1,000.
No, my achievement whoring days were gone long before they bumped it to 1,000 for Xbox, all Xbox games. But, yeah, it's good sometimes to fire up, like in Mario Odyssey or Breath of the Wild. I don't have to worry about, oh, let me jump on this enemy 40 times to collect this achievement.
Yeah, like, I mean, and Mario, not even Mario, but some of those games do the achievement idea in a way that I do, like where it's tied to something end game. So I guess Mario would be a good example. Mario's achievement is get the damn moons. And how do you know you accomplished it? You have a damn moon. That's the achievement. If you don't want it, you don't collect the moon. That's fun. I like getting, like, what was it? There was another game I played recently where all the, if you unlock this, that's what it was, the earlier reviewed 9 parchments. That's a great example of how achievements should work, where the achievements are the goals that are required to unlock people in the game. So they're trophy / achievementable tasks, but they give you something in-game tangible too. So you don't feel like you earn them because you want them because they do something for you, not for that score, you know? So yeah. It feels better to acquire them.
Ah, man. Well, Purnell, always good having you on chatting about these games. That is it for this show. Actually, before we wrap it up, I have a question for you. Have you ever played the game Sword Coast Legends?
I've never even heard of a place called the Sword Coast, let alone any legends about it.
Well, it is a top-down action hack-and-slash RPG, Dungeons & Dragons, called Sword Coast Legends. Want to let our listeners know, because we reviewed it quite a while back, the game is being delisted at the end of the month.
Oh, wow. On which, Xbox?
On everything.
Which systems is it on?
It is on Xbox, PS4, and Steam, I believe.
It is called Legends of the Sword Coast?
Called Sword Coast Legends. It released on console, I think, last summer sometime. I think they had maybe a 2-year license for the D&D license, and that is running up at the end of the month. To help people out, the game is actually on sale for 60% off on, I believe, every platform right now. I know right now on Xbox One, you could get the game for $4.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'm going to look that up before.
They will no longer be able to sell it, but they did say that the online servers are expected to stay online indefinitely. So, you're not going to be losing out on any gameplay. You just won't be able to buy it at, you know, next year. So if you were thinking about getting Sword Coast Legends, now that it's on sale, you could get it for $4. I would pick it up now before it's gone for good.
I'm looking to it right the heck now. I'm curious about this little number.
You shouldn't. If you get on Xbox, let me know. We'll play together.
Okay.
It's a really fun game. I think my only big gripe when we reviewed it was the loading times were pretty rough, but it's been a year or so. Maybe there's some patches out that smooth that over. I should go back into that and check it out.
Okay. I'm going to look into it because I am legitimately curious about this, especially if I do when someone's getting delisted, which for the record, there's Purnell's issues with online game or digital games.
Yeah.
But anyway. But when something gets delisted, definitely puts me on the curiosity train. So,
well, there you go, man. $4. Pick it up now while you can. But that is it for this show. More Christmas music is going to follow. And Purnell, any final words to end the show?
I hope you got all the cool Christmassy shit you guys have wanted to get for the year, because holiday season is done. You've been bought out. But hopefully you guys have a great holiday weekend. This episode should come out before Christmas weekend. So
yeah,
you have a great holiday weekend.
Tuesday when it comes out. So there's still like a week until Christmas.
There we go. Yeah. Have a happy holiday. Tip top tet. Crazy Kwanzaa, to quote Mr. One, Krusty the Clown. But I hope you have a good holiday season. I hope you got all the things you wanted and you were able to get things that you wanted to get for other people who are seeking it. So
sounds good. Purnell, Merry Christmas.
And a Merry Christmas to you as well, good sir. Ho, ho, ho.